The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Can't believe it's already the last program of the week. We're at the end of the three-week period where the time has been staggered between the UK and the US. So don't forget, if you're in this part of the world, don't forget to move your clocks forward Saturday night. But don't do it too early because we've got another live broadcast, a special Saturday edition of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. That's scheduled for tomorrow at 9 a.m. in Oklahoma and 2 p.m. in the afternoon here in the UK. That, as I've been saying, will be a live presentation from my father from Armstrong Auditorium in Edmond, Oklahoma, the beautiful campus of Armstrong College. So don't forget about that special edition of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming to you tomorrow. And then tomorrow evening, then, if you're in the UK, you can move your clocks forward before you go to bed. And then all things will return to normal on Monday, at least with respect to the time. Certainly not with respect to the world. It still will be very much abnormal. There is a global pandemic of fear and hysteria right now, and there's no signs of it letting up. It continues to spread. Well, Prime Minister Johnson now has the virus. And this follows news from earlier in the week that Prince Charles as well. Everyone's getting it, and everyone's going to die. Global hysteria and panic and fear like we've never seen it. That's been the news, really, for the past 3 weeks, I guess. The last two in particular. We'll go through some of the timeline later on today's show. The timeline of events. I touched on some of the key dates in the special Saturday broadcast last week. And the more that continues to turn up. Yesterday, I talked about the experts being in retreat. And that continues. But it does not matter. They could scale it back to, okay, we think there might be 1,000 more deaths. Forget about millions, tens of millions. Spanish flu, we're not comparing it to that anymore. But in the next 4 months, there could be a few thousand. And people would still panic because that's what we've been told to do. And everyone's going along. Everyone just follows the mob. The whole economy, the whole Western world shut down. Of course, the prime minister, he'll continue to work on. He's essential. But the non-essential shop owner, he's got to stay home. Even if he's had the virus about a month ago and he's completely over it, completely healthy, completely immune to it, you got to stay home. You got to be quarantined. The thinking is that everyone could have it, so everyone has to stay home. That's where we are. That's how bizarre, really, how obscene this is. Talk about an attack on fundamental rights and liberties for the people of Britain and the United States. I think there's just a handful of states that haven't gone just headlong into this nonsense. Everyone's on board. Everyone's on board. The UK police, and you've seen probably little clips from around the world, these officers at the lower levels, they seem to relish the opportunity they have to really, you know, flex their muscles, to show their authority, to follow people around, to chase them off, to capture them on video. They're encouraging people to, even neighbors, those that would violate these regulations, these new regulations, to let the authorities know. James Dellingpole, he had a pretty good article on this crackdown. that's going all the way down to the local levels. He says the coronavirus pandemic is turning sections of the populace into tin pot fascists. I call them COVID Nazis. He says elements of the police, as we're about to see shortly, would have worked with an excess of zeal to prop up the new regime. What I'm saying definitely is that I've seen an aspect of my countrymen and women that I'd hoped I'd never have to see, an ugly, pedophaging, nitpicking, curtain-twitching, intolerant, judgmental, shrill, mean-spirited, vindictive authoritarianism of which they all ought to be ashamed. That's Dellingpole writing at Breitbart. What a shame, the way people are reacting to this. You would think, as I said earlier in the week, that following the Prime Minister's speech on Monday night, there'd be an outcry, not a peep. 76% in Britain think it's totally fine to be under house arrest for who knows how long. And even as we continue to hear back from the experts saying, very quietly, we might have over-exaggerated it, and this might be an overreaction, and we might be paying for this for decades, but really, we still are doing the right thing. We're just supposed to do it. This is just what we're supposed to do. Dellingpole says, for years, Britain's police forces have proved themselves incapable of many things, catching burglars, stopping knife crime, stopping gangs of Muslims, raping girls. But when it comes to stopping people popping out for an illicit country stroll, boy, are they on top of the situation. When it comes to keeping people confined to their houses, now they are Johnny on the spot. They're right there to enforce it. He says, yes, that's right. They actually use drones to spy on city folk who've come to exercise their dogs and other dangerously transgressive behavior in one of Britain's most celebrated beauty spots, using the drones to chase people away from the Lake District, I think it is. That's the Chinese communist police state right there. Forget about the Magna Carta and forget about the dust is collecting on these ancient documents. We don't really use them. What we really have to uphold and promote is just the power of big government. That's what we worship. What a change. What a dramatic change we've seen in our nations. Just 2 seconds ago, they were celebrating lawlessness. Well, go ahead, the leaders would say. Take to the streets. If you school children want to get out, if you want to get up and walk out of the class, if you want to walk out of the school, go ahead. Go ahead. You're children. You're the young people. You should be in charge. Go ahead and protest climate change or gun violence or whatever it is. Then this happens and no one can leave. Men, women, children, nobody. And you've got neighbors now joining in on these police state tactics, as he said, peering through the curtains out the window, spying, seeing if everyone's complying. Isn't this fun? COVID-19, mass hysteria, mass fear, worry. It makes you yearn for the kingdom of God, for God's family government. It makes you yearn for health and prosperity, peace and happiness. It makes you yearn for law-keeping, obedience all across society because we love God and His laws. And then God, in return, just opens the doors, not just to our houses, to this world, but ultimately to the whole universe. Of course, He has restrictions. Of course, He has laws that guide us. There are guiding principles. But what a twisted and distorted world we now see with Satan as its God. That's how you explain it all. Just mass confusion. and people now, questioning and doubting just other human beings in general. Human beings that they used to pass by and not even care about, wouldn't even look at. Now, all of a sudden, everyone's a suspect. Peter Hitchens, he was on a podcast, I think just yesterday, with Dellingpole, the one that wrote that piece at Breitbart. And he said how that, well, he made this point on Sunday in his Daily Mail column. He said that these restrictions, these new rules, they have no basis in law. They have no basis in common law and constitutional law. He said it just boils down to power worship. We're just to worship the power. We're to worship the ones in power. And you think about what my father has written before about will worship and the attack from the radical left that expects you to just do it because they said it. Remember that clip I played, I think, on Monday? Governor Cuomo, who said, well, I walked through, I can't believe you. I said it. I made the decree. I can't believe you New Yorkers would disregard that. So they've had to clamp down in New York, New Jersey, some of these other states, to make sure that nobody congregates at the local park to play basketball outside. You got to stay confined to your home. And look at all that's happened because of this mass hysteria, because of this pandemic of fear. Congress passes the biggest spending bill in the history of the world. How many? I'm going to have the guys put a list together. If you're listening, Richard, take note. How many things in the last 2-3 weeks have happened that have been unprecedented? How many events in the last 3 weeks have never happened in the history of the world? $2 trillion, like I said yesterday. First, it was a trillion. Then they bumped it up a little, quote unquote, 1.2, 1.6. Well, let's make it 2 trillion. And there's already politicians calling for more money. This is the first of a couple more bailouts, we hope, because we certainly need more. And now we can start to sift through the details of this obscene spending package. That's what it is. $25 million for the House of Representatives. The funding supports the House's capability to telework, including the purchase of equipment and improvements to the network. Funding is also provided to reimburse costs for the staff of the House Child Care Center and House Restaurant contracts. And also, of course, for their salaries. Got to bump that up just a little bit. Because, well, Corona. Everybody's suffering because of Corona. People are dying in the streets. Neighbors are dying. Family members are dying. When has this happened? For the flu, for tuberculosis, for lung infections, whatever. When has that ever been the big news? A politician tweets it out, I'm sick, and there's headlines. That's the front page. How long will this continue? The U.S. representatives, the senators, they've set aside $25 million for the architect of the Capitol. This provides funding and gives the architect of the Capitol authority to purchase bulk and distribute cleaning supplies. So he has a lot of money now, whoever heads up the architect of the Capitol, to head off to the store to load up on toilet paper, cleaning supplies, things of that nature. The Library of Congress, $700,000 funding and authorities provided to reimburse the costs of staff and the library's child care center. This is all because of the sickness the virus, the pandemic, the Department of State gets $674 million for their diplomatic programs because I guess they've been impacted adversely by coronavirus. $324 million to bolster the coronavirus response at diplomatic facilities domestically and abroad, including additional support. Well, on and on it goes. $350 million for migration and refugee assistance. This is in the $2 trillion spending package. What about the United States Agency for International Development? They needed $353 million. Who even decided these figures? Seriously. How do you decide that the United States Agency for International Development needs $353 million? This is just monopoly. This is just funny money. This is just handouts for everyone. International Disaster Assistance, $258 million. We've got $88 million for the Peace Corps. The Department of Transportation, now they've been affected by the coronavirus, which seems strange because we're not supposed to leave or go anywhere. But they need $31.1 billion. Now we're into the billions for the Department of Transportation. The Federal Aviation Administration, the planes too are grounded. But they need $10 billion to maintain operations at our nation's airports. So here are the bailouts. Amtrak, $1 billion. Nobody's riding on the train, so we gotta make sure Amtrak keeps its head above water as well. And then how about this? The Department of Housing and Urban Development, $17.4 billion for housing and urban development. $4 billion for homeless assistance grants. Just a sampling. Coming from the biggest spending package put together by any government ever in the history of the world. And there's no turning back. The disease could die down next week. The disease could die down next month. But this package goes forward. There is no turning back on this. You look at some of the numbers that maybe aren't as amplified as they should be or reported on as they should be. There's a website that tracks the total number of tests. Going through this, seeing how the news media covers these stories, whether it's Sky News, the Drudge Report, the major media, wherever you are, I honestly don't know if I'll ever be able to look at any of that again the same way. All of the coverage, the cases, the people infected in the United States. The United States is now the epicenter. There's more people in the United States that have it than China, than Italy. And of course, this is because the United States has been testing on a massive scale like no other country. So of course there's more that are confirmed in the United States. But where will they tell you this? The director of WHO himself, he talked about how that this is the early stages still. Why? What was his proof? Well, because of the number of confirmed cases. 3 weeks ago, the confirmed cases was such and such. 2 weeks ago, it was such and such. And now it's this. Look at the United States. We've confirmed there's 85,000 cases. Well, this is but a fraction of the number in the United States. And it's the same with Italy. And it's the same with China. China just stopped testing. That's why it stayed at 80,000 for the last several weeks. It's an outbreak. And it's spread just like the flu spreads. Just like it spreads to tens of millions. So 540,000 people have been tested in the United States. Total positive tests, 82,000. Negative tests, 458,000. So a lot of people who've been tested, well, they went away with a negative. They don't have it. They don't have the virus. And the point that we can make from this is that the more this hard evidence comes in, the better you can begin to get a feel for how widespread it is and what the death rate is. Of all these people tested, about 15% have tested positive. So if you just extrapolate that out, and even there, you have to imagine that of those 458,000 that tested negative, they must have felt a little bit uneasy, but how many of them were just in a state of panic themselves? We can't know for sure, obviously. But let's suppose that most of them at least didn't feel the greatest. Then you have some of these other stories of people that, even Boris Johnson, very mild symptoms. The three New Jersey Nets players, they didn't even know they had it. Lots and lots of mild cases out there that nobody knows about because they're not tested. But taking the group in the U.S. that have been tested, 15% have tested positive. If you extrapolate that on out to the entire nation, 15% of the United States, that amounts to about, I think, 40 million people. 40 million. And then you look at the death rate. And as I've been saying all this week, well, there's not as many dying as they were saying back in early March. Not even close. And then compare the bottom line. We've talked about the swine flu from 2009. One of the worst flu seasons, just influenza seasons that we've had, was just 3 years ago, 2017 and 18. This was about a year into Donald Trump's presidency. Did you hear about the 61,000 people who died from the flu that season? Of course you didn't, because that's when Donald Trump was a Russian agent. That's all you needed to know then. He was working with Vladimir Putin. 61,000 people. 61,000 Americans died in 2017 to 18, the winter of 2017 to 18, because of the flu. And how many contracted the disease? 45 million Americans, according to the CDC's estimate. So that's 15 to 20% of the country. 15 to 20% of the country that got the flu. And of that, 61,000 Americans died. And no one, not in the media, not in Washington, not in Imperial College London, not at the CDC. Well, the CDC at least reported on it, but no one batted an eye. It didn't even cause a ripple in the news cycle. And you're talking about 45 million Americans getting the flu. Imagine if during that season, everyone who was somebody, the celebrities, the politicians, the sports stars, if they were tweeting out, I got it, I got the flu. I'm going to confine myself to the house. I'm going to hopefully do some work long distance wise, use some video conferencing, things of that nature. But I do have it. And let's remember the safety of everything. Everybody withdraw. Everybody quarantine themselves. Did you see the latest estimate? I forget what the group was. It's from AFP. Some group in the Northwest, I think it was. And this got a bold headline. I think they put it in red at Drudge. So still, it's reported within the context of hysteria and fear. Never mind that underlying that is the obvious truth that they got it wrong. U.S. virus deaths may top 80,000, study says. COVID-19 could lead to more than 80,000 deaths in the U.S. and overwhelm hospital capacity. So they use some of the same language, overwhelm, soaring, and so on. But now we're down to 80,000. I talked to you yesterday about what Neil Ferguson said. Millions in the United States, as many as 500,000 in Britain. He's already walked away from that. 80,000 deaths over the next 4 months, according to this study. Now, okay, at least it's in the ballpark of something that makes sense based upon what we're seeing in China, Italy, and so on. But even 80,000, that would make it a really bad flu season. And to get to 80,000, not that anyone would even want that, it says over the next 4 months. So the U.S., if coronavirus gets to 80,000 over 4 months, we're going to have to lose 660 Americans every day for the next 120 days. Could it happen? I suppose it could. Do the statistics from Italy and China and everywhere else suggest that that will happen? Not right now, not as of right now. The total deaths worldwide are at 23,000. Here are the experts backtracking away, but we're still in the mass hysteria zone. So even when they dial it back, even when Neil Ferguson comes out and corrects the record yesterday, or I guess it was 2 days ago, do you think the media are quick to get them the new message out and say, hey, we got it wrong. This is cause for celebration. Maybe we can relax the restrictions. You don't hear that. You don't hear it at all. Andy McCarthy, he says, the question naturally arises, how much less than 1% could the fatality rate be? More specifically, could the fatality rate for the coronavirus disease that sprang from China approach a figure as low as the fatality rate for influenza? He says, I reckon the answer must be that even if the coronavirus dipped perceptibly below 1%, it would still be much worse than the flu. Why? Because none less than Dr. Fauci, he says so. Though he recently wrote that the rate could be considerably less than 1%. So Fauci has said it's 10 times worse, and then recently he says it could be considerably less than 1%. These are the experts. They don't know. Well, in fact, they do know. They know more than they did a month ago. They know more than they did 2 weeks ago. And so they use language in a way that it always gives them an out. It could be this. I know I said this before, but look, it could be anywhere in between. We've got to be safe. Total lockdown. Even if we can save one life, let's shut it all down. 3.3 million claims for unemployment this week in the United States. The biggest spending package in the history of mankind. Here in Britain, everyone now works for the government. Bailouts for everyone, individual, collectively, all of us. These are things you can't roll back. And all of it for a disease that the experts are now quietly saying, yeah, I guess it's not going to be as bad, not near as bad as I originally thought. When we come back, we'll go through the timeline from these past six crazy weeks. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Just over 6 weeks ago, the Dow Jones Industrial Average peaked at 29,551. And that seems almost like 3 years ago. That was just a few weeks ago. 29,551, February 12th. Well, as we now know, the coronavirus was making its way into Europe at the time and other places too in Southeast Asia. Iran was hit especially hard. But at that time, with the impeachment proceedings having just ended, the media, the Western media, especially in the United States, turned its attention to this spreading virus. Even though there were only just a handful of infections, at least that we knew of, in the United States, the media took this story, they ran with it, and they weaponized it against Donald Trump. And as you know, we've covered it on this show. To that point, President Trump had been one of the few Western leaders who actually took measured action to contain the outbreak. He put that travel ban in place. January 31st, he established the coronavirus task force. But by the middle of February, as far as the Western media was concerned, in the United States especially, he was part of the problem. He didn't act fast enough. He didn't do enough to contain it. Well, you know about that campaign rally at the end of February when the president talked about the hoaxes, the Mueller hoax, the Ukraine hoax. And he said, this is their new hoax, this virus, the way they're covering it, the way they're spreading fear, the way they're spreading fear and paranoia and hysteria. And that comment in South Carolina prompted a swift firestorm of criticism in return. The radical left accusing him of saying the virus itself was a hoax. Not their sensational, hysterical, sky is falling coverage, but the virus. He doesn't even believe the virus is real. You know, there are commentators who still say that. He comes out there with his task force every day. And there's commentators on the left who still say that. About a month ago, Roger Kimball, I think he writes at PJ Media, he offered this prediction for all those that were screaming a month ago, saying this is going to be the worst. Everyone's going to die. Kimball says no one knows exactly how far or how fast the coronavirus will spread. Again, this is a month ago, thereabouts. Nor does anyone yet know what its toll will be. But those predicting, at times, their eagerness makes it seem that they're hoping for something as deadly as the Spanish flu epidemic of 1918, when some 50 million were killed, are likely to be disappointed. Well, are they disappointed? They're not even saying we got it wrong. They're not even saying we over-exaggerated this by 10, 20, 100 times over. No, they're still inciting the panic, the hysteria. They're still scaring their populations. And this was President Trump when he got back from that rally in South Carolina the next day. This was on a Saturday, February 29th. And he said this about his team and how prepared they were for this this disease. Clip one.
We're prepared. And I'd like to just ask and caution that the media, we would respectfully ask the media and politicians and everybody else involved not do anything to incite a panic, because there's no reason to panic at all. This is something that is being handled professionally.
They didn't take that and run with it, you can be sure. Peggy Noonan, remember, said, for those that would say don't panic, that's terrible advice. We gotta panic. We have to panic. There must be mass hysteria. Now, the story, it's not exactly the same with the countries in Europe, those countries having been hit harder. When you just look at the percentages, they, of course, all of them have the nationalized medicine, the National Health Service. And according to these terrifying estimates put out by the experts, there was, I think, a real concern that there'd be a run on the hospitals. And there's only so much space in these more socialist countries. So we heard it, whether it was that side of the pond or in America, we heard it from every direction. We've got to flatten the curve. We can't have everybody getting sick at the same time. We've got to take action. And then you start getting these reports from the experts, from the World Health Organization. That's their job, to kind of monitor these infectious diseases, one of them at least. And who can forget when Dr. Tedros got up and said, this flu, this has a death rate. He didn't say what Fauci said, 10 times more. Fauci said 10 times more, assuming it was about 1%. He said, Tedros did, 3.4%. That's like 30 or 40 times worse. Here's what he said, March 3rd, clip 2.
Globally, about 3.4% of reported COVID-19 cases have died. By comparison, seasonal flu generally kills far fewer than 1% of those infected.
That's the leader of the WHO being completely dishonest with the figures. Using the known cases or the confirmed cases in the case of corona up against the estimated cases of influenza. Of course, it's huge, the difference. When you look at it that way, if you look at it fairly, you could argue that the flu is even more deadly if you're just going to go by the number of people tested for the flu. Well, after that statement, that was March 3rd, then the other experts started to come forward. There were some saying 4 or 5%. And by this point, it was really Donald Trump alone, maybe a few others. But he was the lone voice of sanity and reason on the international stage. He said on March 5th that this 3.4% figure is a false number, because how do you know how many mild cases there are? Those that never report to a doctor. President Trump at that time said he thought the figure would be way under 1%. So who was right in early March? Was it President Trump or was it Dr. Tedros? At the time he said it, President Trump, you remember how he was just castigated for being ignorant, irresponsible, all those things. How does he know? He's not a doctor. He's not an expert. He's basing that on a hunch. Well, on March 9th, as we've covered before, the anti-Trump media in America, they had seen more than enough. CNN's chief medical correspondent, Sanjay Gupta, he told the CNN audience, starting today, you will notice that CNN is using the term pandemic to describe the current coronavirus outbreak. He said, it's not a decision we take lightly. While we know it sounds alarming, it should not cause panic. which of course it immediately did. I've told you before about Trish Regan and what she said the same day. She tried to downplay it. She tried to say, look, they're weaponizing this virus. They're trying to use it to attack President Trump. But leave that aside. Why would CNN be out in front of the World Health Organization and the CDC in the United States? So you've got Sanjay Gupta declaring the pandemic even before the WHO and before the CDC. CNN, theoretically, CNN's supposed to be reporting the news, right? Well, that's the CNN of old. I guess some would even argue that point. But CNN is no longer in the business of reporting the news. They're in the business of making the news, creating pseudo-events. On March 9th, they were making the news, and they were using that pseudo-event. Not that the virus wasn't a virus. They were using the hysteria, the panic. They were weaponizing it against the president of the United States. And I've talked before about how even the executives at Fox News, the pressure was so intense coming from the radical left. Keep in mind what my father said in the March issue of The Trumpet. It's the radical left is worse than communism and Marxism. Look at what they're willing to do to carry out their agenda. Well, soon after that March 9th CNN declaration, the World Health Organization followed CNN's lead. They declare the pandemic on March 11th. President Trump, remember, he, in response to the spread of the virus and the spread of the hysteria, he responds by putting in place those travel restrictions from Europe to the United States. And then it was a couple days later, March 13th, when he declared a national emergency. That was 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago. So 2 weeks ago, the world's in the midst of this global pandemic. The U.S. is in a state of national emergency. And then you have all this incitement of irrational fear and mass hysteria. All of that is in rapid motion, and even still, who could have predicted? Who could have predicted what was about to happen? Even with that mass hysteria, even with those declarations, we got back from the college campout and thought, what a week. What a week this was. What a wake-up call. Well, look at what's happened in the last 2 weeks. It's critical, that juncture between the declaration by the WHO, the national emergency on that Friday, and then the chain of action that started the following week, because it was over that weekend that there was a study published by Imperial College London. I talked some about this yesterday. And they came up with the so-called evidence that all of these talking heads needed, that all of these scaremongers needed. The WHO just came, they threw the 3.4% out there. Sanjay Gupta said, hey, this is spreading. We've got to get ahead of the pack here. It's a pandemic. And they didn't really have the evidence. They didn't know the death rate. Virtually everything about this virus was unknown at that time, a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. So then this Neil Ferguson, the one I talked about on yesterday's show, he's the reason why he's significant is because he's the primary expert that our governments in the United States and Britain relied upon for direction on how to contain this virus. And listen to what the New York Times said about this Neil Ferguson and his team of scientists. This is from March 17th. We went back yesterday and today to just look at that crucial period before the governments of this world went absolutely bonkers. March 17th, it says, with ties to the World Health Organization and a team of 50 scientists led by a prominent epidemiologist, Neil Ferguson It says Imperial, this is Imperial College of London, is treated as a sort of gold standard. Its mathematical models feeding directly into government policies. So you've got this team put together by Neil Ferguson. He's got the nice strong ties to the WHO. Tedros, remember Tedros had the 3.4% scaremongering statistic. And the New York Times says, hey, if this is the London, if this is Imperial College of London, well, that's the gold standard for scientific research and theory. The gold, and what did the gold standard determine based upon their research? Well, according to their model, the Imperial model, 2.2 million Americans were going to die, 510,000 British. If we didn't do anything, that's how many were going to die. The Post, the Washington Post said these kinds of numbers are deeply concerning for countries with top drawer healthcare systems, but they're terrifying for less developed countries, global experts say. So the U.S. and Britain together, we're going to lose 2.71 million people in this plague. But what does that mean for the rest of the world? What does that mean for the underdeveloped world? This is terrifying. If it's 2.7 million deaths in these two nations that have pretty good healthcare systems, what does it mean for other nations? Well, the study went on. If you put in place some modest efforts or measures to curtail the spread, you can knock that down to 1.1 million deaths in the U.S. and 260,000 in the U.K. But then this, finally, this is from the Washington Post 2 weeks ago. If the British government quickly went all out to suppress viral spread, aiming to reverse epidemic growth and reduce the caseload to a low level, then the number of dead in the country could drop below 20,000. To do this, the researchers said, Britain would have to enforce social distancing for the entire population, isolate all cases, demand quarantines of entire households where anyone is sick, and close all schools and universities. Now, this is what the Chinese did in Wuhan. Total lockdown. This is what Dr. Tedros really admired. Remember how he said that the Chinese, they had established a new standard in confronting outbreaks. And along comes Ferguson's team. He's got the ties to Tedros. He comes out and says millions are going to die. And he basically says, we got to do what China did. This is the gold standard, remember? That's the label the New York Times picked. Imperial College of London, the gold standard. Ferguson's quoted in the New York Times as saying, based on our estimates and other teams, there's really no option but to follow in China's footsteps and suppress. That's coming from the experts and their supporters in the radical left and the media. Well, I played those clips from Rachel Maddow's show, remember, a couple weeks ago? That New York Times science editor, I think it was, he was talking about how great all of the Chinese detention camps were. It's not so bad. If they come and rip you away from your family and take you to a camp, you'll have dance lessons. They loved it. The radical left, they love the way China dealt with this. That's the way they want the rest of the nations of the Western world to deal with it as well. And according to Ferguson, unless we do that, there's going to be millions of deaths. If we do that, if we have a Chinese-style lockdown, then maybe, at least with respect to Britain, maybe, just maybe, we could bring it down to 20,000 deaths. So how long did we have to put this police state tactic or this police state program in action? Well, according to that report from 2 weeks ago, Ferguson's team, they said probably 12 to 18 months, a year, year and a half, total shutdown. We've got to do it to save lives. This was the Imperial College of London's report. This was their research and then their suggestions, their recommendations. The New York Times said this about their study. It wasn't so much the numbers themselves, frightening though they were, as who reported them? Imperial College, London. The numbers were terrifying enough, but the fact that it was Imperial College, London, well, we have to respond to that. We have to act on this. The gold standard had spoken. So that was over the weekend, just after the national emergency was declared. President Trump, you'll recall, this is a week ago Monday, March 16th, he comes out with his task force. He holds up the 15-day to stop the spread pamphlet. He goes through some of the suggestions that he gave at the time. You know, washing your hands, protecting the sick and the vulnerable, staying away from large groups, avoiding discretionary travel, that sort of thing. Prime Minister Johnson here in the UK, he had a press briefing the same day and was giving some pretty sobering advice. To this point, the US and Britain had seriously contemplated maybe we should just let this thing run its course. That way we build up our immunity in case there's a resurgence of it in the winter. But because of Neil Ferguson's study, because of his alarming statistics, his terrifying statistics, because of his admonition, well, these two government administrations, one in the US, one in the UK, they were prepared to impose draconian measures. In the States, I guess it was a little bit different because President Trump announced them more as recommendations, and it was more the state governors and mayors that ran with it. But what's interesting in looking back at this history from just 2 weeks ago, the Washington Post said about Ferguson's study or forecast that it was quickly endorsed by Johnson's government, that's Prime Minister Johnson here in the UK, and that it was also influencing planning by the Trump administration. So both administrations made decisions ahead of this lockdown based upon Ferguson's report. Now, from that same day, March 16th, here's, I think her name's Deborah Birx, on the task force in Washington, D.C., and here's what she had to say about what was influencing the decision-making for President Trump's team, clip three.
So we have been working on models day and night around the globe to really predict, because some countries in our very early stage, like the United States, we've been working with groups in the United Kingdom. So we had new information coming out from a model, and what had the biggest impact in the model is social distancing, small groups, not going in public in large groups. But the most important thing was if one person in the household became infected, the whole household self-quarantined for 14 days, because that stops 100% of the transmission outside of the household.
So that's one of the experts on Mr. Trump's team, paraphrasing basically the conclusions from Neil Ferguson's report. And that was at the early, early stages before all of this crazy police state action taken by our nations and others too. As I've covered on this show, it swept right across the world. The New York Times headlined their article the next day, "Behind the Virus Report That Jarred the U.S. and U.K. to Action." They're talking about the Ferguson Report. The New York Times says that it triggered a sudden shift in the government's comparatively relaxed response to the virus. This is the imperial model, which now is thoroughly discredited. And the imperial model, let's be honest, it's based on the Tedros model. And the Tedros model is based on the Chinese police state model. This is the way we're fighting this crisis. And as we're beginning to see, what kind of a crisis is it? Even when you compare it to a recent flu outbreak from 2017, We'll see. We'll see if it gets up to 60,000 deaths. No one hopes that it does. But once the dust settles on this, and we're able to crunch the numbers even further, the experts are already in full retreat. And yet these strong arm tactics, these strong arm measures, they're still in place and will be for the foreseeable future. And there's so many things, so many actions that have been taken that you can't change. You can't roll it back. Don't forget about our special Trumpet Daily radio show, television show, really, if you watch the stream tomorrow. My father will be speaking live from our headquarters campus, 9 a.m. in Oklahoma, 2 p.m. in the afternoon, right here in the UK. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you tomorrow.